Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025, 5:30 p.m. Present, we have Marilyn Prue, Ellis Merchant, myself, Gina Lyon, and Jacqueline Lorien. I will call the meeting to order. It is still 5:30 p.m. Any changes to the agenda, additions, or deletions? I do have one thing I need to add under action item. After H, we'll have I, and it is the CWSRF Authorized Representatives Update Form.
I'm sorry, what was the CBS?
CWSRF Authorized Representatives Update.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yep. It's for Clean Water State Revolving Fund. Do either of you have anything to add, change?
No.
No, I don't. I will just make note that I listed under other items that at 6:30 p.m. is the Vermont PUC public hearing regarding the 5.61 rate increase. I do plan to join the hearing here to testify if I need to with Steve Farnham from BEPSA and Eli Emerson, which is our attorney handling the rate case. It's not part of our meeting. My hopes is that we will be able to finish and adjourn the meeting before the 6:30 p.m. public hearing. If anybody would like to stay and join me for that, I'm going to have it here on the laptop. Okay. Privilege of the floor. Jacqueline, do you have anything?
I'm good.
She's good. Thank you. Minutes from the regular Board of Trustees meeting, dated September 9th, 2025. I thought they were good. Thank you much, Jacqueline.
I agree.
Yep, I didn't see any anything.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion to approve the minutes from the regular Board of Trustees meeting, dated September 9th, 2025, as presented.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Moving right along, meeting minute format. Jacqueline had sent me, when she typed up the minutes for September 9th, a different format, open to suggestions, open to whether we stay with the original format that we have or consider the second format, the other format that is in your backup material packet. Yep. Here, I just said I'd add it to the agenda to discuss.
Yeah, there's no real rhyme or reason for this request, quite honestly. I've been reviewing other municipality meeting minutes just to, you know, be sure that we're on the right track and everything is being covered. And for the most part, everybody seems to do their own thing is what my research has been. And I didn't know if, you know, we don't get a lot of public participation, so I didn't know if they're helpful to the community. Am I adding too much? Am I adding too little? And I just wanted to do something that was best for, you know, what everybody would like. The second one that I, the one that I presented is just a simple, it's very, obviously, very simplified. And honestly,
it's
all I...
It's more space, so it's like...
It is.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if... Again, I like to try and put in the minutes as much as possible from the, like, the backup documentation that you're kind to include. Because, again, we don't get a lot of public participation here. I don't know how much traffic these meeting minutes are getting online, you know, for us to keep the public informed, for us to have as much detail in the minutes as possible. So... That is just a very simplified format of it, but it would include more detail as I currently put in it, you know. Like, for example, tonight's meeting, even though there's the public forum, or the public hearing, rather, for the rate increase, I did include as part of the minutes, some of the snapshots from the PowerPoint presentation that more than likely will be reviewed as to why we got to that increase rate of 5.6 something. Again, all in the hopes of keeping the public informed and with the detail that they don't know when they don't know.
Right. So that slideshow I will share or add to our website, per se. Because the public hearing isn't going to be part of our meeting, my hopes is to adjourn.
Oh, I should probably put
right.
That
so
back.
We won't want those in the meeting minutes for tonight. But yes, absolutely. I understand where you're coming from. The website there is a tracking to tell me how many views. I don't know if it's specific to which document, but it will tell me how many viewers have gone to our website to view things.
Oh, that's great.
And we do have people that do look at our minutes.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it doesn't tell me who, but it does tell me how many.
And it's consistent?
Seems to be.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Nice. And the recordings, do you know, you can't tell that.
I can't really tell that so because it's a different file format and it's really huge. I could dive into it a little bit to see if I could abstract that data, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's just like basically you've had 19 viewers on your website today and maybe what page. I don't know that it's specific to what document they opened.
Mm-hmm.
But the viewers, can they open up our recording?
Oh, absolutely. Yep, we have to publish them. I actually published the recording. We have to publish them before even the meeting approval, and they have to be online for 30 days from the approval date. So these meeting recordings are actually on for like, because I have to factor in the future, because I figure we're going to approve the minutes at our next meeting. And then it's 30 days from that approval date. So like our next meeting isn't for 3 weeks. So this recording is going to be on there as a draft per se, or it will be on there. But my expiration dates tell me when it is to be removed as 30 days from October 14th when they'll get approved. But per the state law, we have to publish them similar to what we do our draft minutes, like within 5 business days of the
And seeing
meeting.
How we have 2 a month, one kind of overlaps as one is still there?
There's actually usually 3. There's
okay.
usually 3 or 4.
Okay.
But And so if you go online and look, you'll notice at the end of each meeting recording title, I put in parentheses expiration. That tells me when I need to take it down, which is 30 days after we've approved the meeting minutes at the next meeting.
Yep.
And those are here, they're somewhere, so if someone came in and requested them, we have them.
So previous to my becoming the business manager, they're on the laptop here. I can transfer them over. It's going to take a little bit to do because they're large files. But yes, there's an electronic file of them saved either on my trustee laptop or now on the business manager shared drive. Or the shared drive for the village. So, yes, there is access to them, just like there is for our minutes.
But if somebody wants them, they can get them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. I think you do a great job, Jacqueline. It's whatever you feel comfortable with. I think probably the more transparent we are, the better off we are.
Yeah.
But
which we have been.
We have been.
Absolutely.
And so I'm happy the way that you have been doing them. It's totally up to you because I think you do a great job.
I agree.
Whichever.
Okay. I just didn't know if there was something that I should be doing differently, if there's been any requests for anything different added or removed or.
Nope.
I started breaking out. More so because you've been breaking out, Gina, the department operations updates.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that would be good to line item each one of those instead of just one big paragraph.
Yep.
You know.
And you'll see that this is how I prep, and I prep usually the day before. So what I could do is give you a snapshot of this after I write them out. If you can read my writing.
Well, I mean, I'm good with just rolling at it. I don't want to add extra for you.
Well,
that,
I mean, it's just a matter of sending you a copy.
I just wanted to see what you guys thought, you know, and with the whole idea of putting as much out there to the public as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, it, absolutely just for transparency, which
makes
we have been, but...
Makes it probably easier to follow, too. I don't know. Like you said, it's not one big clump in a paragraph. It's broke down where...
Yeah, because
you can...
sometimes, you know, we get into, like, a lot of heavy things, and I'm just trying to find, like, an easier flow and the right wording.
Mm-hmm.
Because on paper, it's easy to read, but, well, on paper, it can be confusing until you hear, like, all the little details that you can only... get when you're present
mm-hmm.
for the meeting, you know? So, and I can't capture all of that, but the recording does. So we got a couple different,
right.
I think we're covering it all.
I think
absolutely.
We are too.
I think we're really covering it all, which
yep.
is good.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm good if you are.
Yep, I agree with Marilyn's statement, and because this is under an action item, we probably should make that motion to leave it up to her to format her minutes correctly.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm going to make a motion that we allow Jacqueline Morgan Clark to continue doing the meeting minutes as she has been very well in whichever format she's comfortable with, as I'm comfortable with either one.
A second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes. Thank you, Jacqueline, for doing this.
Thank you.
Just keep track of time here. Bills and warrants.
Yep, we have looked through them and they looked great. So I will make a motion to approve the bills and warrants as presented.
And I will second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Lien. There is a property that myself and Sheila, finance manager, and the electric billing clerk, Julie, felt was necessary. This is regarding an electric account. You'll see in your packet that there's the lien, but there's also the electric account information as far as the customer name. I need to point out, this is a rental property. So the service address is 1523 Evansville Road. But you're going to notice that I also included a screenshot from the Vermont Parcel Viewer, because this rental unit at 1523 is part of the main property unit. It's not two separate lots. So this lien has to legally be placed on the owner of the property in the entire property, which is at 1145 Evansville Road in Brownington. And this is for an electric account that is delinquent in the amount of $2,459.63.
Now you're putting a lien on his personal property?
You have to put a lien on the entire property because the rental isn't a separate property. It's part of his main property. It's got a separate 911 address, which is why the account is at 1523 Evansville Road, because that's the 911 address for that trailer, and that's where the service address in this account goes to. But the property, he just rents it, he doesn't own it, and that trailer sits on the big property, which is what we can lien. We can't just lien 1523, because 1523 is part of parcel 1145. Did I say that correctly?
Yep. Nope. Perfect.
Okay.
So I'll make a motion to approve the lien on parcel, parcel at 1145 Evansville Road, Brownington, Vermont, in the amount of $2,459.63.
I will second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes. Sign sign that, and then I will get this filed with the town of Brownington.
That is Brownington.
It is. Perfect, thank you. 2026 pageant park season. I took a moment and I updated the 2026 season forms, looked at the dates. It looks like it will open on May 22nd, 2026 and be open through September 9th, 2026. This is following the exact same calendar schedule that we have for years. I think they are allowed to set up the Thursday before Memorial Day weekend, and they depart the Wednesday or Thursday after Labor Day. Basically, the only thing that I did change on here is the dates. I have had... I take that back. The other thing that I did change was the pageant park rules. I did update it a little bit to include that supervision of all children and disabled individuals in your party is required. We have run into a couple of situations this summer, or I ran into a couple of situations this summer where there is a disabled individual that made some campers. People that were on the beach feel uncomfortable. His supervisor or the person responsible for him, his caretaker, claims to have been watching him, but he lets him wander. There was an issue with this caretaker and the pageant park caretakers. It did not go well. I intervened. I became involved, but I've had multiple conversations with him that we can't tell you not to go there, but we can tell you that you need to supervise him at all times, and that means with him at all times. You can't let him wander, especially if you know, I can't control other people's perception of this individual, but because you know that people perceive him incorrectly, you just need to stay with him at all times. I also added the reduced speed to the posted limit at the park entrance is absolutely required because this same caretaker, I don't know if he was upset, whatnot, has speeds in and out multiple times or has numerous times. And so I added the posted speed limit. I added the supervision of all children and disabled individuals in your party. We also had a tenting group where there was an autistic child. The parent let this child roam on their own. Other campers intervened to pull this child out of the ravine that goes from the culvert into the lake, into the inlet.
Yeah.
And said it was a very, the caretakers again said it was a very dangerous situation. Their caretaker wasn't watching this child. So I just did add that as well as a requirement just to protect ourselves because there were issues this year. I didn't speak to them, but one of the clerks said we did have a patron come in who is a routine seasonal customer come in to say, I really hope you guys look at your rates because you're really high compared to other local campgrounds and for the amenities that we offer and so forth. So what I did include in this packet for you also was the financial statements as of the end of August because September is not closed out yet. But also I went on to the website and printed off the information I found for local campgrounds to look at what their rates are to compare and to see what they had for amenities compared to what we have for amenities. And I quite honestly didn't agree with the statement that was made to one of the billing clerks. I think we're very comparable to other municipalities and so forth, or other campgrounds and tenting sites and whatnot. Come on in.
Okay, I was going to say, I don't want to interrupt before the meeting starts.
No, the meeting started at 5:30, but you're welcome.
Oh.
To have a seat.
Said six.
Six.
No, five. 9:30.
Oh, you're right. It does. My apologies.
Well, you're welcome to join.
Yeah, and we do have a hard stop at 6:30, but we can. It's okay. It's fine. It's fine. So, something to consider. I put it in there as an action item, not knowing if we were ready to set the fees for 2026. However, I wanted to get it started because we have had people request an application because they want to get their site reserved. So it's something that I didn't want to put off for too long. But the forms are updated and ready to go depending on what's decided for the rental fees or the access fees to the campground.
Now, did this person give you any list of things that we're missing that they think that other ones are providing?
Not that I'm aware of. They just said the amenities, but I don't know exactly what they mean because we do have showers. We do have a bathhouse. Granted, it is outdated and needs to have some repair work done, but we have the pavilion. We give them barbecues in the area. There's picnic tables, and you're on a lake. There's only one other campground that I know of besides the one above us, too, but they're not right on the lake, but they do have access to the lake. The other campground is Prouty Beach. They're right on the lake. But Willow Wood's not on the lake. Kingdom Campground in Lindenville's not on the lake, and the one in Irisburg is not on the lake.
Is this more for seasonal or tenting?
The person that did make that statement was a seasonal camper.
Hmm.
Yep. So.
That's what I wondered.
Looking at the information that you got, doing quick math, so a seasonal camper and one of the comparisons that you have would be $4,812.50 for the same amount of time. And I did it at 3.5 months. I'm sure electricity is included in that. And ours is 2,200. So,
which does include water and sewer. It does not
right,
include the electric.
Just the electric. And then the next one I saw and did the quick math again for the same amount of time. Was $4,375 for the summer season. So I'm really not interested in making it any lower than
no,
what it is.
I don't think
I
we
think
can.
It's a heck of a deal, even though they have to pay their own electric. Say it's $400 for the season.
Mm-hmm.
That's $2,600. So
Right.
So I'm definitely not for decreasing the cost.
No, I agree as well. Do you have an idea? Do you want to ponder this for a little bit and come up with whether or not we want to stay status quo or that we should look at a percentage of an increase if we feel we need to, because the month of September, as I said, has not closed out financially yet, so we don't exactly know where our P&L is going to fall as far as profit and loss for the park, because we do have some outstanding invoices to still come in, and that would give us a better idea.
Right?
Yeah, we had budgeted for revenues $34,500. And they were actually $34,423, so you can't get too much closer than that
right,
as far as revenue goes. And I would assume the revenues are mostly in here because it's not like it's being used at this time.
So I have to take that back. One camper, and I have yet to investigate this a little bit, but a seasonal camper had not paid for their reservation in full as per the contract.
Okay.
And they paid it late, and unfortunately their check bounced.
Okay.
They were supposed to have come in and paid it in full last week. I have not heard that they did yet. I'm assuming that they have because I haven't heard that they haven't. So that may come up slightly, but I want to say it's like 2,000, 2,100.
Okay. And so at this point, our expenses are $22,722. So at this point, we have an $11,700 gain.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we have a couple $1,000 of expenses, I know a big one that will be coming in is the assessment fee. I believe Pageant Park pays that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like $1,100, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it did well. So, like I say, I don't have a problem if we want to do it one more year at that price.
Okay.
And then
reevaluate next year.
Right.
So one thing that did come up, excuse me, from the caretakers is some of the RVs that are coming in there are quite large for the size of the lots. And so I think we may need to look at, and Jacqueline, you may have some feedback or information to provide on that, on this topic, maybe reducing a lot so that the campers with the slide outs and whatnot, because nobody's out there with their tape measure and making sure that they are falling in the requirements of how big your campers are or aren't.
Right.
And depending on how they get situated also depends on how much space is getting taken up. So the caretakers, one of their major concerns was, looking at the map and figuring out a different layout.
Because campers of our day and campers of today are two different things.
You're a papa.
And I don't know what you think, Jackie.
I remember Andy measuring each site to determine what size camper, and the ladies of the office should have that layout.
Okay.
But to your point, it's not, when they do the reservation, and say for site one, for example, that camper can't be over that certain length that Andy had noted on as for site one. Site two might have a different length. Site three might be like site one. It depends upon how it does lay out on the property. It does get tight towards the road, towards sites 8, 9, 10 get tight because they have upgraded their RVs.
Right.
And I guarantee that they no longer fit on what's supposed to be there. So perhaps maybe when the reservations are being taken, they can see, okay, site one's only supposed to be like 32 foot, and they're coming out, and then ask the question, what is your, what's the length of your camper this year? Because people change campers all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just something to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, if campers are getting bigger, then that means our grounds aren't. So
right.
We're going to have to start eliminating some of these sites.
Right.
There's
going to eliminate. But we have to increase
the cost.
It's going to adjust
our
budget a little bit.
The other thing to consider is the channel. We lost a lot with the last couple of flooding, the last couple of years of floods. And to the point where, you know, at some points in the middle of the night, I would go out just to take a look to make sure that it wasn't cresting, because some of the water did get under some of the campers, the RVs. And so that might need to be considered with how far they back up against the channel.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, we're shrinking with the camper sizes. And these people, and it's hard for these people to say, okay, I want lot five if they're seasonals and they want to stay where they normally are, and then they go and they buy a new RV and it's bigger and they've already put money down to keep their site.
Yeah, that's why it's a great conversation to have now.
Ahead of time, exactly.
Yeah.
That's why
to warn them ahead of time of,
they're going to have
potential
to be careful.
Changes.
Why don't we not make a decision on this, table okay. this. I will have a conversation. He's going on vacation. I probably won't have, it won't be the next, it might be the next meeting on the 14th regarding the lot sizes and what his take on it is. Because he knows historically who's there every year and what size their campers are and whatnot, because he's a camper himself and he just upgraded this year. So we'll leave it as is, but the forms are updated, the dates are what they are, and we can, I'll have an update for you after I have a chance to get with Andy about lot sizes and so forth. I will add that the caretakers that we've had have already expressed that they very much enjoy doing this and they would like to come back again next year. So I just said I would share that with the board, and then maybe when we bring this back up again, we can decide to offer it to them or decide right. what we're going to do at that point.
Great.
Okay. I know there was a little bit of a question for this last year because we weren't really sure what the communication was with them and Vera before Vera left. And so we advertised it. They were like, but we're really interested. How come? Anyway, they just didn't want to see that happen again. They wanted to be right up front and say, we would like to come back.
Yeah.
So, okay. So no action taken on that. And I have some more homework to do.
Yeah, ask him if he's concerned about the chunks coming off on the panel.
The what?
The chunks of land falling off.
And of course, truing that up, you won't be able to touch it, I don't think, because it's a waterway.
No, you can't. Right. We'd almost have to eliminate that spot.
I know.
Yeah, I got a lot of that going on in the back of my place.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Okay. Item I, the CWSRF appointment of alternative authorized representatives. So this is for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund infrastructure. So Mike Maynard and myself, Mike Maynard with A&E, are working on the proposed 2026 facility upgrade to our wastewater facility department. As part of this, we had a meeting with Clean Water State Revolving Fund to potentially use them for funding for the project. We did receive word today that we have been approved for it to finance through them for the project should we move forward. Of course, this is going to have to go before a bond vote, but we're not ready for that step yet. But while when I got the approval letter from them today, I noticed that it was sent to our previous wastewater manager, and it was also sent to Crystal Currier, who is now retired and not part of our team. So I emailed the gentleman back at the state and said, oh, they're no longer here. Can you update to me, Sheila, and to our new wastewater manager? And there's a form that we have to fill out, and it has to be signed by the board. So this happened at the perfect time because I could add it to tonight's meeting. So basically what I did was I completed the form to basically update, authorizing myself to act as the alternative authorized representative of the application. And then the change is to remove Crystal Currier and Timothy Digesh, who no longer are employed with Barton Village. And then I updated to add additional authorized representatives, Sheila Martin, our finance manager, and Nathan Tarian, our wastewater manager. And so I am going to make a motion that we approve and sign this document so that the correct point of contacts are on file with the state.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So if you would please sign there, and I will get that to them tomorrow so they can update their records.
Do you have that in this new packet? Because I just, like,
now. I did include it in your new packet.
Okay, perfect. I'll
yep. Them. Yep.
Thank you.
You are welcome. All right, discussion item. On October 27th, we have been asked to do a joint meeting with the Village of Orleans trustees where Ken Nolan from VEPSA, who is the general manager will be there to have a presentation or update regarding the AMI project. This will count as a public meeting to fulfill the grant requirements of the AMI, as well as to discuss power supply, meaning where we have to purchase and what we need to purchase and from who and what tier one means, tier two, tier three, and what RECs means, because a lot of the emails that I get, I don't understand. And I'm the first to admit, I'm like, exactly what it is, what is it that you're talking about? And so John contacted Ken to see if we could set that up, because his board of trustees are also having questions about it. And he's like, you know, I have questions about it, so can you come and explain it to us as a whole? And we just thought it would be great because VEPSA is going to be coming from, they're going to be traveling for that. And because we're both involved in the AMI grant project, this will fulfill the public meeting that we need to have for receiving the grant funding. So October 27th is what worked great for Ken Nolan to come. So that falls on a Monday. So our meeting would be Tuesday the 28th. But I'm going to suggest that we warn this as a special meeting that we're going to do down at, in Orleans at the MAC building. I still think that we should still hold the meeting on the 28th for our business, but I just wanted to propose and make sure that October 27th is going to work for you to do a joint meeting, and I'll warn it appropriately like we have done before down in Orleans.
Yeah, sure. All right.
Okay.
And what time will this be?
I'm assuming it'll be 6.
6,
which
is the
their
normal
time.
Normal time.
Yes, 6 p.m. So I will just confirm with both of them that that is a go, and then I'll work on making sure that that gets warned appropriately. Okay. Department operation updates. How are we doing for time? 6:07. So for the office, Sheila Martin has started full-time and did as of Monday the 22nd. She and I met with a representative from NMRIC yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday because today is only Tuesday. To discuss revamping our payroll, GL accounts, as well as just our general ledger APs, funding accounts in general, because there just seems to be an awful lot of account lines for every department that we feel, we've talked about it before, needs to be cleaned up so that it's streamlined, an easy process, easy to read. And so to begin that conversation, I believe when John was helping us with management, he had Marilyn reach out to Cynthia at NMRIC to start the conversation, but then the changes happened and we knew Sheila was going to come on full time as of this week. We kind of wanted to wait for Sheila to get her feet under her and get here full time, and so we've initiated that, and I'm just letting you know that we're working on it. I think it'll be good. It's going to clean up our system tremendously. DPW Lincoln Ave paving project has started. They have grinded all except for under the railroad tracks. That's quite the process. You have to get a flagging or a flagger from the railroad to do any work under, around, or near the railroad tracks. It's the state of Vermont. You have to do a special request form online, and you have to go through the process, and you need certificate of liability insurance to protect you and the company that's going in to do the work. The approval finally came through Friday, or last Thursday or Friday. However, Pike originally told us they couldn't come till next week, but then Pike contacted us and said, oh no, we can come start grinding this week. So unfortunately, it was approved, but when I talked to the gentleman from the state who schedules the flaggers, he only has 5 flaggers who are responsible for the entire state plus New Hampshire. And so he said, I don't have anybody available until next Monday and Tuesday. So Pike did all that they could except for around, near, and under the railroad tracks. The plan is next Monday they will come in when we have the flaggers to finish grinding under and around and near the railroad tracks, and their hopes are they're going to lay pavement the exact same day. So let's hope we don't have any rain Monday. If we do, it'll be Tuesday because the state was able to give me a flagger for both Monday and Tuesday of next week. If the project needs to carry over to Wednesday, I was reassured by the state that they would have somebody for us.
Free.
Well, so our DPW guy was not real happy about it because it just didn't work out, you know, and Pike's like, we want to do it, but you know what, we have to follow the rules, and this is what they tell us, so this is what we have to do.
Yeah, when you deal with the railroad, I'm surprised you even got it that quickly, because when we was trimming power line beside the railroad, we had to have the same procedure, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know, trees don't seem to bother them as much as maybe doing dirt work under their railroad. So, I mean, that's probably why you got them so quick.
So, apparently, Barton Village has never gone through the online application process. They've always just picked up the phone and had a connection and said, we're doing this, can you get me somebody? And it just happened. Well, that's not available anymore. So, that was learned awful quick. ditching is done on Pageant Park Road as well as Eastern Ave. This is part of the Building Better Roads grant project that I'm going to be submitting for grant reimbursement by the end of this month. I'm just waiting on a couple more invoices to come in, and I'll get that sent out to the state.
Looks great, by the way.
It does. I think they did a very good job. Yes, thank you. Du Bois and King will be here. We had a kickoff meeting with them last week regarding the two culvert projects, FEMA projects that we have up on High Street and Lincoln Ave. The kickoff meeting went really well. They'll have a site surveyor on site sometime this week, maybe next week. They're supposed to let me know exactly for sure when, so I can notify the adjoining property owners that they might see somebody in a vest that says D&K. They're just doing a site survey as far as what is there, what needs to be there to give us an engineer plan for how to replace those culverts. Pageant Park culvert. So what we thought was done as permanent work, State of Vermont A&R will not give us a permit for, because the hydraulic study shows that replacing in kind was not big enough for the hydraulic study that was done for that site. Therefore, FEMA, I've got to send out a request to have FEMA change that from being 100% done to being 0% done, and we're going to be putting it back out for A&E to have the correct size culvert, whether it be a box culvert or whatever, developed through an engineer. I'll have to put an RFP out for an engineer to redesign and redo the Pageant Park culvert. So what we did was basically temporary work, even though it was originally put in as permanent work. A&R said, no, it's not. We won't accept it. Therefore, we now need to work with FEMA and the state of Vermont to open that project back up to get it done right.
And is this the state that didn't accept it?
A&R would not issue a... they issued a temporary permit, but were pending the hydraulic study.
Now, was it covered from FEMA the first time for the temporary?
It was, but we're going to have to withdraw that project because they're going to have to put it out to bid and do an A&E for assessment and engineering plan for the box culvert or whatever it is that the engineer tells us we need to do.
So all money that we put in it is out of pocket?
It possibly could be. However, we're going to put in a late request for damage inventory on an emergency situation based on what A&R has provided us for information within this last week. I had a meeting with FEMA today along with our state of Vermont representative, and they seem to think that we're going to be okay. So I'm just giving you the update that that's where we are with this. More to come. Our two summer temp employees for DPW were told today that Friday, October 10th, will be their last day. Andy, myself, and Sheila will discuss and look at budgets to determine what our winter plan is going to be. I'm hopeful to have something to present to you for approval for either a part-time, possibly full-time, regular employee, but we weren't quite ready to do it just yet without looking at numbers. So more to come on that. Just a quick update regarding the village, dirt bike and racing car complaints. I don't know if you've seen it all over Facebook and whatnot, but there has been some issues going on. I have been in contact with the sheriff's department. I'm waiting to hear from Sheriff Harlow. She was gone to a seminar, I think this last week or 2 weeks, to schedule a meeting to sit down with me. I have had multiple conversations with the dispatcher regarding different complaints, a dirt biker riding around popping wheelies, riding without a helmet. I have learned it's a minor who doesn't even have a license. All I can say is that there are neighbors down there that have submitted a statement to the police recently, and that I've had conversations with that resident that's had issues. They have kept me updated as to things that have happened, that they're going to be making a statement to the police for pending possible charges, specifically to the resident that this is all stemming from and coming from. But I just wanted to let you know and get it out there, as I've been instructed, that if we see something, we need to call the sheriff's office at 334-3333.
I'm not sure
who's talking,
but you're not muted.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What is muted?
Still not muted.
No, I'm working on it. Thank you.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. We are now that we call the police department and we report what we see, and if they have a sheriff available, they will send it out, send one out. So, I'm looking into a USDA community resilience grant opportunity. This could be for truck replacement. It could be for multiple things. Sheila and I had a meeting with somebody through that grant program last week, I think it was. And so we're going to sit down and figure out what the project potentially could be, but it's another grant opportunity. The Seacard Family Trust lawsuit regarding Sunrise Ave, we received a order signed by the Vermont Superior Judge on 9/18/2025, so that matter has been resolved. We did get the, as we had agreed in the stipulation, the lower Sunrise Ave, we accepted that as a dedication, and that will become part of our town roadmap. The only other thing out of it is that we did get the easements for Upper Sunrise Ave as well as Sunrise Extension. And before we do any work up there, we have to, for Upper Sunrise or Sunrise Extension, we have to notify all the landowners up there ahead of time in writing what we're planning to do and when we're doing it. That's really the only stipulation that we have.
Now, at one time there was two different disputes on where that road lies. Now that is all carved in concrete now.
Yep. Per the true line surveyor map.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Water, we're waiting on one more estimate for the generator project to come in. So I'm hoping to have that before you at the next meeting so we can choose a contractor so that we can proceed with that program or that project. Wednesday morning, we do have a couple of more state people coming in to do the 3D image of the water well. So once I have that report from them, I will share it with you. We are still working with the state about the possibility of blending a percentage of our water well with our ground surface water to hopefully eliminate the disinfection byproduct levels that we're having in the high levels of TTHM, I believe is what it is. So more info to come on that. Wastewater, the solar bee, should be fully repaired and functioning and placed into Lagoon 1 on Thursday. So what that's going to do is help with the irrigation of Lagoon 1 because none of the aerators, as we saw previously, are working. Solar bee came from the water treatment facility. It apparently was originally in the reservoir to circulate that. Years ago, something happened, a piece of ice hit it and sunk it. We were able to salvage it and repair it so that we're going to put it on like a DC motor. It won't be solar, but we're hopeful that by getting it running again and putting it in the lagoon, it will help with the irrigation, which will also help with the monthly testing that's happening down at the wastewater treatment plant. Electric poles and DCU work has started for the AMI project. There is a Smart Hours program. The enrollment period is opened for EV users. That all came out in one of our monthly, we had to send out a monthly notice regarding the Smart Hours program. It's for EV customers, and if anybody was interested, they had to reach out to VEPSA and or us. So that is still happening. And then Hydro, that project is going extremely well. They did start tearing down penstock number 2, the one that we are replacing, on Friday. Penstock 1 is completely done as far as being sealed and painted. And the ground has been filled back in, so it has been buried the way it has been before. Headgate is in. They were working on placing the steel stairs down there, so they had to do some concrete work. I think they're hopeful to have the stairs in place this week. If I don't get out there this week, I'm planning to get out there next week because I'd like to see how things are going, especially after they remove that penstock. Okay. Some pictures that I think Dennis had sent to all of us really mm-hmm. showed some yeah. major wear and tear.
Yeah. I got a chance to go up there the other day.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's amazing to see.
They did a really super job. On penstock 2, they're not replacing it clear to the cement. It looks like they fixed one little section where it comes out of the cement box up top.
Are you talking, no, that one that's totally being replaced, or are you talking about the one that's
the totally painted? Being replaced. It's like they painted one section probably,
I think that
8 or 10 feet from the box itself, and then it comes down.
Yep.
And then I think they're leaving, must be
yep.
that was
that's
good enough.
Stable. Yep.
But yeah, it looked good.
Yeah, it's
looked
just
really
the penstock itself.
And then I see that old piece, and it was really rusted. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It don't look so bad on the outside, but the inside, it's just flaking off pits, and that's why it's springing loose.
Yeah, and that makes me happy that we did decide to have somebody go into penstock 1 and seal and coat it, because that's
yeah.
going to save, make that the life, the longevity of that penstock longer.
And that might be something in the future should be checked if we can afford to shut it down and maybe do it every so often, reseal.
I think there's a guarantee for so many years, and it's quite high.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
whatever
I mean,
the product was that they used. Yep.
Be really wise to try and make it last as long as we can.
Absolutely. So that's all I have for department operation updates. We do have to adjourn for a 6:30, the public hearing. But under other business, I'm going to open that back up to privilege of the floor because we had you two walk in a little bit late, but that's okay. If you could just state your names,
yes.
that would be great. I know who you are, but they don't.
So I'm Natalie Duffy. I live on Breezy Hill Road.
Just like your last name?
D-A-L-P.
Thank you.
And I was just hoping to talk to the village trustees about the water and sewer bond that we received. This was brand new for us, being on Breezy Hill. So I wanted to start off by thanking you for your service. I know that it's really difficult to balance budgets and all the infrastructure needs that we're hearing about right now. But in the line of fairness and equity, and I also think legality, I really want to address that I don't think that residents should be taxed for services that they can't access. I understand people who choose not to be on town water and sewer, us in particular, we've never faced any of these rates because we've been exempt, because it's not been a choice. We just don't have access to it. And I often make comparisons to like the education system, right? We all pay for education, whether or not we have kids in the system, because it benefits our whole community, right? Raising kids who have access to high quality education, everybody should have access to. And now where I work, we often see towns that don't have their own education system, they have to pay so their kids can have access. And when I look at our systems here, I'm paying out of pocket, as I've just done, to get water and sewer up to our primary residence because I didn't have access to town water and sewer. And now for a large commercial construction going up on Breezy Hill that has just gone through the whole Act 250 process, which is lengthy and extremely expensive, that we had to do another private well and septic system for. So I think that it's unjust to require residents and property owners with no access to this municipal water and sewer to pay for bond debt that benefits only those people that use it and have access to it. And it's also inconsistent with Vermont law that I'll get into in just a minute. And I also think that it undermines our public trust in village government. So the law states that the water and sewer bonds are meant to be paid for by system users, but it allows, explicitly stating, it allows municipalities to structure bond repayment through user fees or special assessments. But taxing people outside the service area violates this principle and imposes a double burden. So residents, like myself, pay once for our own private wells and septic systems, and then again for public infrastructure, which we can't connect to. Not that we don't want to, because we would have, but that we just can't access. And not only do I think that that's unfair, it borders on taxation without benefit, a principle that's been long rejected by the courts and sound policy. Fairness ends when double taxation begins. So we are kind of a unique case because we're on Breezy Hill, and that's the boundary, approximate boundary as to the village. And so where we are, we don't have access to the lines. And as I've stated, we've invested significant time and money to maintain private wells and septic systems, go through water testing, and now I'm being taxed for a system that I can't use, paying twice. And additionally, because since the interstate has been built, there's been no boundary that has been officially surveyed. We are using terms like approximate. So we know somewhere near Breezy Hill is the boundary, but whether that's the interstate fence, which then I wouldn't be part of the village, or if it's Breezy Hill Road, then I would be part of the village, we can't say for certain because there's been no legal official survey put on record. I've also reached out to the town clerks who have confirmed this information for me. So I think that that just calls into the question the efficacy of whether or not Breezy Hill is in the village and can be taxed. So I'm not asking the village to ignore bond obligations, obviously, but I am asking for fairness and legal compliance. And I've come up with a couple of possible solutions just to navigate the conversation.
I do have to just stop you because we do have the public hearing at 6:30.
Absolutely.
We will be adjourning. You're welcome to stay, and then we can reconvene the meeting, but that's entirely up to you.
I do just have some handouts as well.
Yeah, I can feel your pain, Natalie, because I'm one of those residents myself. I'm not on the system, but I'm in the village, and now I'm going to be taxed for it. So,
do you have access to it?
So the house that I'm in they could not access it because I was going, they went across a brook. It wasn't a house I built, it was a house I bought. So I have my own sewer and water, but have not ever been taxed until just recently. So I can totally relate with you and really thought hard about it. But based on the attorney information and information we got from the state, we felt it was the right thing to do. But so at this point, it is 6:30. I'm going to make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Again, we can reconvene after the public hearing if you'd like to sit and join us. It shouldn't be too long. It's 6:30 and 7. It depends on how many people show up for this. Okay. So
we'll poke out and see if are you parked right out front? Okay.
You're welcome. Just join.
I'll throw a stone at you.
Okay. So I'm making a motion to adjourn at 6:30. All those in favor?
Aye. Thank you. That sounds okay.